Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Crossover. Starring Josh Johnson and Chris McGill. Featuring Christina Thorson. And of course, you, the Instagram live chat. Now, sit back and enjoy this week's edition of The Crossover. Powered by Card Ladder.
All right. People come in here. Welcome, everybody. Today is Friday, March 8th. Welcome to the crossover. And we start our show with announcements. Do we have any announcements related to Card Ladder? No? I have an announcement, actually. If you are considering submitting a private sale, and we have had an uptick in those lately, and so there's a bit of a backlog in reviewing them. If you are considering submitting a private sale, please review the brand new documents that we put out on Card Ladder's help page that spells out the requirements for submitting a private sale. It can be found on the Zendesk on Card Ladder, and it tells you what you need to submit a sale because the requirements are often not met upon the first submission, and that's probably partially on me for not making them clear enough and obvious enough and easily accessible. So we've got a brand new document out, spells out what needs to happen. Please check that out. Okay, enough of that. Let's
mail days.
Go on to any potential mail days.
I have a mail day.
Yeah, yes, I know you do.
You guys?
No. With our deal through.
Yes, all right. I did not do a live today because I didn't feel like it. So this is my first reveal here. 2005. Exquisite limited logos LeBron. And PSA 9 with a pretty sweet patch.
Pretty sweet. Nice.
Got that one today. This one took a bit of back and forth, bit of patience, but we got it done. And then they overnighted it. So nice and smooth private deal.
Congrats, Josh.
Very cool. How's it feel?
It's nice to get a mail day. It's been a while.
Yeah. Yes, it is. All right. That's a big one. Congrats. Okay. Let's get to the questions then, because I don't know if we've ever had this many before. So it's going to be, I'm going to try and rush through them to, you know, not rush, but try and get to as many as we can. All right. First up today for our topic, two questions on it. First one is Collecting for Fun 23, who asks, how many times will people talk and post about the Wemby 1-of-1? And then the second question is from PLB Cards. I just saw the Wemby Prism Black get pulled. The black color match with both the Spurs jersey and the black curtain actually look pretty sweet.
Let the record show. I said that on a crossover previously.
No, the record will not show that. Declined.
Was there a video being pulled?
No.
I've only seen this. This scan.
But that is the scan. There's some concern about the centering, but there's also a picture out of the card that makes it look like it has better surfing. I think the card is a little bit tilted to the right inside the holder from the point of this scan. And it's just a black background, so you can't really see that there's a little extra space over here. I think the centering is better than it looks in the scan.
Plus, they allow 60-40 on PSA 10s, I believe.
Right. On the front side, yeah.
So, I mean, honestly, like, I agree with you. It does look like it's a little bit more nudged onto the right side of the slab, like inside of it. So,
yeah. I mean, the amount of comments on the various social posts that are just like, the centering.
Yeah.
It's great. It's great.
Has there been any bounties yet? And do you think there will be any?
No. No, no bounties. A little surprising there's no bounties. I mean, obviously the retailers don't need to issue a bounty because this is a product that sells itself. But I'm surprised there isn't a buyer out there in the market who has, you know, made their big offer known so that they can secure it for themselves.
I mean, this is a big card, man. He doesn't have a, you know, he's not going to have a Logo Man NT auto. So this is it, I think, right? This is like his best card, and it's not even that close. There's not even a competitor.
Right. I mean, I think there, I don't see why there wouldn't be Logo Man non-autograph cards, which
still
would be pretty nice. But yeah, traditionally a Logo Man non-autograph card doesn't get into the realm of the Logo Man autographs or the Prism Black.
Yeah, and this and the PSA 10, I know it's a one-on-one, that doesn't matter that much, but it matters. Like, it's a PSA 10 of, you know, maybe the best prospect of this, like, five-year window, and it's the Black Prism, and it's a huge card.
Yeah, very, very, very cool card. It's just, I've actually been amusing myself a lot reading all the different, like, replies and tweets about it and stuff, and
just like negative stuff or what?
No, not necessarily negative, just all different types of, you know, looks off centered. Another guy says, wouldn't an RPA one of one be the best?
I like to be negative and joke about stuff, and I'm pessimistic. I just am not seeing the negative here. This is like the coolest card of the year, the best player, best rookie. It's a sweet card. And it's like, oh, I would want something else. Oh, you know what's a better value would be a Jordan card. Oh, come on, guys. I would never spend money. You know, that kind of crap. Like, then don't comment on it.
Yeah, there's always those two. All right, so another guy goes, $1 million card using a curtain as a backdrop. Wow.
Yeah, we're like, oh, what a expensive piece of paper in plastic. Like, then just go to a different, you know, go to a different space and comment somewhere else if you don't like it. I just don't get it.
Another guy comments, I bought a box at Target today to see what all the fuss is about. And look, I got my own Wemby. And then he posts his Wemby. There's always the random comment on any post where it's like, what about my card?
Yeah, it's not available yet.
DM me in case it ever becomes available, guys. Here's our looks OC left to right.
God, is anyone like, wow, sweet. That's awesome.
Listen. I feel very sorry for anyone who pays $1 million for this card.
This one.
Wemby won't last 5 years and he will never sniff a title. once he gets injured, his career is finished. Players with this body type don't last. How am I the only one who sees this?
It's like, the day that the card is pulled is the day you decide to just like rail on the player and hope he gets hurt.
So good. This guy goes, maybe when he retires or has dominated the league for a decade, it'll be worth a milli, but it ain't selling for that much with him as a rookie. No one's paying $1 million without him making the playoffs. I could see $250K though.
Who said million? Are people replying to
I'm reading the Twitter post by Eric Whiteback, who estimates the value to be $1 million+.
Oh, I was gonna. Yeah, I have my own estimate. I don't think it's $1 million, but my number is pretty high. I thought I was gonna have a hot take, but $1 million is, that's the hot take.
Yeah, it's hard not to think grading is a joke and borderline scam when you see stuff like this. Yeah, and the funny thing too is I really think it's like a product of the scan. I just think it's because it has like a black background, you can't see the card. There's a picture of the card out that's not a scan, and you can see better. The centering looks better.
Do you know what the black finite Trevor Lawrence rookie is graded?
Six, PSA 6, right?
So on that day, they decided to not be a scam and graded a 10. Like, this is the first one. I feel like PSA has been given like 8s and 9s to a lot of these big time cards. And now they finally give a 10 and it's like, oh, it's a big controversy.
Yeah. Then there's like a few like on this wavelength of this guy goes, why is it an incredible moment for the hobby? Because the breaker or the card shop always gets to pull the awesome card. The regular Joe never has a shot. How is this great for the hobby?
But it actually goes to a regular Joe, right? It's in a break. So the hobby shop pulls it, but they don't actually get the benefit of it.
Yeah. That's a good point.
So they're wrong.
This guy goes, this card looks so mid. Oh, this one had me laughing. Panini had a sheet of these. This is the card that they put into circulation. Wild. I need to rethink my investments. Average Joes will never win in this hobby.
Average Joe literally won this card in the hobby in a break. You're wrong. You're wrong. Oh, every comment is wrong. Every single one
so
of them.
So good. I just love, I've become a big fan of reading the comments. Especially because, like, people aren't replying directly to the person who has the card. This is replying to somebody who posted about the card and, like, hyped up the card. So, okay. You know, it's triggering people a bit, but.
Because they're jealous they didn't pull it themselves.
Yeah.
Okay. What do you think? Right, what do you think the value is? Give your estimate. Just give a throw out a random number.
I don't know. I think over a million, personally. Wow.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That's a lot. Yeah. I mean, here's why I think it wouldn't do that, because the Giannis did like 1.1, and that was kind of like at the peak.
Yep.
And he'd already won a championship when that happened. So I think it's probably like, but when. Wemby seems to have a lot of, positive attention. I would say like 600 grand, but geez, I thought I was coming in hot.
600 grand would be a really interesting price because it's obviously a stomach-turning amount of money to spend on a card, but it's also leaving room for upside if Wemby has this unbelievable all-time great career too.
Yeah, but I mean, someone paid like $1 million for the Anthony Davis and he won a championship in the bubble and it's like gone shit down.
yeah, that you might even be understating the downness.
That card's like under 100k now.
Yeah. All right, it's very cool to see that card pop. Very cool to see you get a PSA 10. Selfishly, I would love to see that card come to the market because I think it would be really cool just to see how much bidding action it gets and stuff.
I think it will. I think whoever has it, and even me personally, if that was me, I just wouldn't trust any private offer. I just would want to see what it, you know, like that card is just so hard to value and you just pulled it. Me personally, I'm not a huge fan of auctioning a card, but I feel like I just wouldn't. I would lose sleep for the rest of my life if I took a private offer not knowing exactly what it's worth, and a public auction, it'll just, you can't lose sleep. It is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair point. Okay. Enough about the Wemby. Next question is from Jose, JGP45. He wants to know, what is the best card day of the year? Is it release day of the new year of Prism football for basketball? Is it Friday of the National? Any other day you can think of, what do you say? What is the best card day of the year?
The like Wednesday or Thursday of the National is good. Like getting into town, kind of feeling the pre-buzz.
Yep, I like that too. That definitely is one of the first time you approach the building that's holding the National.
Mm-hmm.
Probably right around there.
Yeah. And then it's ruined. I should go in and smell everything.
Once I walk by the Breakers Pavilion and have my eardrum pierced.
We love the Breakers Pavilion.
We love the Breakers Pavilion. We'll probably you can probably find us at the Breakers Pavilion.
We'll be the one, like ones wearing earmuffs.
Okay. All right. From Drake's PC. Why are the same cards? Oh, this was a little spicy. Taking shots at, not taking shots, but I don't know. Maybe it is. Drake says this. He goes, why are the same cards of the players we are told have the largest collector bases, seemingly the ones that come to auction the most frequently? Oh, by the way, before I finish this question, let me congratulate Drake and Dennis, DPZ, on their new show together. That should be debuting on the Sports Card Dad YouTube channel sometime soon here. Congrats to you guys. Okay. So that's what Drake wants to know. He's got, why do these players that are supposedly have these large collector bases, why do their cards always come up for auction? So I asked him, obviously, you know, we're not going to let you get away with that, Drake. We're going to say, which players this referring to? Who are you talking about? Because that matters, obviously. And he replied to me, a bunch of different players. He says, if the super rare or scarce card that I want of a player that I'm told is highly collected, like MJ, LeBron, Brady, Mahomes, etc., is not available in this month's premiere or elite auction, just wait until next month and it will likely be there. There are cards of Peyton Manning I've been waiting for 3+ years to hit auction. So does that mean his collector base is actually stronger because people hold his cards versus just auctioning them over and over?
Well, it's probably, you're probably not going to see me auction off my Todd Gurley collection.
You're taking the private offer on that one.
No, it's just because, like, you know, I don't know. It's just not worth it to me to, like, sell all that stuff. And so, like, as the value, what I'm saying is, as the value of the cards go up, as the player's value goes up, the more likely someone is to sell it. So you're just going to see more, and there's just more volume of those players. There's more collectors, there's more flippers, there's more everything. And because they're more collectible, the people who are flipping are looking to pick up those cards and auction them more and transact them because they know what other people want. It's just more activity in general.
Right on. Yeah. So since you mentioned that point, I want to mention the comment that Mad City Collector made, which is kind of in the same ballpark. He said, it seems to me that it is the investors and the dealers and the flippers who are hijacking collector principles and markets to try to profit off the back of collectors. Once the price escalates, it becomes harder to find an end collector, and it's just investors and dealers and flippers selling to each other. Parentheses, flippers vortex.
That's one of your favorite observations, is like, you know, it's paying like more than what you thought the comp would be just because it's one flipper trying to flip to someone else in the next auction.
Yeah. And I actually, I get really annoyed by that because it, makes cards more expensive than they otherwise would be. No. We've already had an episode called Flipper's Vortex, actually. Okay, so the part of this that I wanted to reply to was his observation that there are Peyton Manning cards that he's been waiting years to come to auction. You know, there are, I could name cards of MJ, LeBron, Brady, Mahomes that people have been waiting for years to come to auction too, and they don't. So I'm not sure if that is the metric I'd use to make my point on this topic. I think that you could find very desired cards of each of these players that don't ever surface. Just the same as how certain Peyton Manning cards don't ever surface. But to the cards that do come out more often, I think what Josh said and what Mad City Collector said are more so applicable there. So, all right. Anything else on that one, Josh?
I don't think Mahomes' is two best cards have at auction, have they?
No. Well, let's say this. The Mahomes Black Finite sold at auction for a little over 4 years ago and hasn't come out since. And his NT Shield autograph, 1/1, that sold privately almost 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So
we have numbers on both of them.
Yeah. All right. Vinny Slabberino says, always enjoy the show. We spend a lot of time curating our collection, but when the time comes to sell it, the cards will most likely be sold individually and not as a collection. Does this mean that nobody else on the planet would want our collection? And if so, does that make you happy or sad? Thanks, Vinny.
That's always one of my favorites when they're like trying to get a bonus if they sell it all as a group. Selling it as a set. A little extra money here. I put it all for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that makes collecting unique is that everyone has their own style, their own collection. You never really see anybody with the same collection exactly. So trying to sell stuff in bulk is always tough. Anytime someone posts multiple cards and they try to sell it as a group, people always in the chat or in the comments like wanting to buy. When you're ready to sell them individually, let me know on this one, you know?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It would be like a basketball team trading their whole roster for the entire roster on a different team.
Yeah, that would be fun.
Yeah, it would be a little bit like that. But it's like, no, it's like each GM might see one player that they like on a different team that they like to trade for to bring to their team. But they don't want the whole roster the other GM made. That's the roster that GM likes.
Yeah. I mean, the Suns tried it this offseason. We got rid of our entire team except two players. So.
Christina?
I mean, I wouldn't mind, like, if the Mavericks traded their entire team to someone who actually had a coach. And I think, like, that team could be good.
Okay. Could have the Pistons.
All right. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It speaks to, like, a question that comes up a little bit later. And you know what? I might as well go to it now. It speaks to this idea of there not being a consensus anything in the hobby. Like, you can – there are let me just read the question, then I'll try to explain more. This is from Mostly 90s Basketball Cards. Figuring out which cards to collect of a certain player, team, or category is, for me, the most fun part of the hobby. It always rubs me the wrong way when content creators or collectors attempt to create a consensus list of a player's best cards for collectors and especially for new entrants to follow. What advice would you give to a new player collector, and what's your favorite way to research or discover new cards, sets, or parallels when you enter a new segment of the hobby? Okay, so like, this is what I'm connecting here, is like, there's this idea from Mostly 90s from Dave that there isn't even a consensus list of what the best cards are or what order they should go in. Or if there is, that, you know, that's not for one person to decide. And that, you know, you put that up against, like, well, why wouldn't somebody want to buy my whole collection? Well, that my collection reflects my opinion on stuff. And the odds of somebody else's being the exact same as mine are going to be really low. But there are situations where whole collections get bought out. But that's for the purpose of piecing them out and making money by the only time that happens is if the collection can be had at a discount. Yeah. So that you can piece it out individually. What do you think about this?
I know you got an answer to the second question, though. This is on something you're pretty excited about.
Well, what do you think about the second question?
It's like not wanting people to tell you what to collect or like what the order or the ranking of cards is, something like that.
Yep.
I think it'd be nice to have that ranking system as like a baseline of just knowing what all is out there. And then you can kind of formulate your own ranking based off of that. You know, it's like a starting point.
Totally. Yeah. I think everybody should have their own system. And if everybody does have their own system, then if one collector posts, hey, these are what I think the top 10 cards are, you know, you, instead of like being influenced by that, you can just compare it to your list and say, okay, well, that's yours. These are mine. And when work from it that way. So I think like the best safeguard against worrying about being influenced or other people being influenced by like lists and rankings being produced by content creators and collectors is to encourage everybody to have their own list and for everybody to develop a collecting philosophy. And then for people to compare their list to other lists rather than just take the list that somebody else makes.
But if you could generate your own list based on factors, you could have some sort of scoring system.
Yeah, that'd be like the logician's way of doing it.
Yeah.
But you don't have to have a collecting philosophy that's totally logical. You know, you could have a collecting philosophy that's based on other stuff, but you should have a philosophy as a collector, I think. All right. Oh, well, you know, there's a question on that topic too, since these all kind of are blending together here. There's a question about, they use the word ideology that I liked. Okay. From JP3 Cards. What is a collecting ideology you once had that may have shifted or evolved over time in the hobby? Example, for me, I used to be very big into autographs and patch autos, and I still like them and appreciate them, but now I'm all about the rare and scarce shiny stuff.
I have two. I used to not care about patches and autographs. I used to avoid them and only do like the 90s shiny stuff in Chrome. And now I collect it, obviously. And I used to be really against grading in general. It didn't make any sense to me. Like, why are people collecting cards and then, you know, enslaving them to these plastic enclosures? But now I've changed my tune on that as well.
Okay. All right. Nice. Those are good ones. Remember the Free the Slab movement or Free the Card movement?
Yeah, where people are cracking them out.
Yeah, okay. I could see a movement like that having a comeback.
Yeah.
Give it another year or two of a down market.
That's it. This multi-million-dollar card inside this plastic is gone.
Yeah. Hold on, I need to write down an episode title. That's good. Mine would be this. Mine isn't anything too fancy. Just, I used to hate on Panini cards, and now I collect them. So there's a shift. I was like the guy. I was like one of those commenters, just like hating on that Wemby card. You know, like, why don't you collect this when you can collect 90s, you know?
I'd much rather spend that money on an MJ. I love when people just are like, it's not even a post of a sale of the price of it, and they're already saying what they'd rather buy. It's not, you know, like, I can see maybe saying that on, like, if the auction house post, so here's the result of the sale, then you can say that. But now, just like the reveal.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, Matt Bubar says, what is one card in your collection that is not gem mint that you wish was?
My 03 chrome gold LeBron. It's a PSA 8. PSA 10 would be so sick. I've always wanted one.
That's a good one.
Because it's like really dependent on the centering on that because of the borders, you know? Like it's like a very border dependent card. So a PSA 10 kind of stands out.
Yeah. That's a really good one. I was going to go with my C-Mac Shield Auto.
Oh, PSA 10 of that? Or 9.5?
Yeah, like a 10-10 of that would be pretty sweet, I think.
Yeah. But it's a 101. You're not supposed to care about grade, Chris. Come on.
Right. Oops. Oh, well.
I think the PSA 10 and Wemby makes it so much cooler, personally.
It does, man. It's even more perfect. It's his best card, and it's got the highest grade.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Who is the Wembenyama of the card letter viewer participants? I don't know. Well, I'll let you guys figure that out. All right. Pac Nicholson says, would the hobby be better or worse if eBay listings had a comment section?
Everything's worse with a comment section. That's the answer.
Yeah, that's a title.
The internet is just worse with comment because comments.
I had a friend say the other day that he never reads the comments on YouTube. He was like, should I start reading those now? No. You've gone this long without subjecting yourself to the toxicity of the comments section.
Yeah, the nice thing about YouTube is that the video player itself takes up enough of the screen where you can't really see the comments unless you like actively go looking for it, whereas Instagram, you kind of see like the top three right away, you know? That's why I like that about YouTube. Like, you know, the Instagram kind of draws you in a bit with like the clickbaity comments, but YouTube, you just watch the video and go to the next one.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, we've reached a point, I think, partially because of social media, where the content is the comment section. Like, there will be a post that's like, start one, bench one, cut one, but the reason the post works is because everybody wants to go to the comment section and see what stupid things are being said.
Yeah.
All right. Also from Pac Nicholson, at what point, let's just like take this idea and run with it just a little bit. What would happen if there were a comment section on eBay listings? What would that look like?
I'd rather spend my money on this card instead of this listing that we're looking at here.
So this idea I've seen, I hate to break it out to him, or you guys, I've seen this on Reels lately of like Zillow should just enter a comment section on their house listing because no one's there to actually buy those houses. It's just content. So like people want to make fun of it with society about like this poop box that's listed for $3 million, like that looks like it should be worth 200 grand. So I think that it would be a lot of that. No one would be hyping people up on eBay. Everyone would be tearing each other down. So I don't think this is a good idea.
Okay. That makes me start thinking about what if the internet experience was anywhere you went at any time, you could start a comment section.
In real life.
Twitter?
Yeah, pretty much is Twitter. But like if I'm on Card Ladder and I see a sale, I can just like, oh, I'm gonna make a comment and everybody can see this now.
Yeah.
Then people start commenting too.
Oh, I won't be building that feature.
Please. Please don't. Okay.
It's just like a plugin that you can put on any site, like a Chrome extension. Comment anything.
Yeah, I mean, we were told that the democratization of things is good, but the more that I hear from my peers, the less I like it. I want to go back to that day when there was just two or three news networks, and they told us the news, and that was it. And I didn't spend 30 minutes reading all the conspiracy theories in the comments below.
Yeah, Facebook ruined everything.
It did. Thanks, Zuck.
Yeah, you used to have to go to a bar and get really, like, drunk in order to hear conspiracy theories. Now you can just look at, like, articles, comment sections.
And I do love conspiracy theories. That's the problem, actually.
We are drawn to the conspiracy negative articles.
Right. Exactly. All right. From Pat Nicholson, at what point does educating become pumping?
Like when you're selling a card?
Yeah. Okay, so he goes on. If you're selling a card you love but need the funds, we just have so many people agonizing over this all the time. Okay. Is it appropriate to share the reasons you love it, hoping it connects with another buyer? Or is that just a manipulative sales tactic?
Well, it becomes a manipulative sales tactic once you make a reel where your head is on the bottom and you're pointing up at the thing you're manipulating.
Like, you know, if Jeff Foxworthy has, like, you might be a redneck if, yeah. And then, like, there's all the ifs.
Yeah.
You might be manipulating the sales tactics if you are a small head.
So they're like, guys, I have stumbled upon this amazing new in-person auto thing, and it's just the best. It's been the best time of my life collecting these. Also, this is about the PWCC auction that's upcoming, and all of these cards that I've curated are now for sale for you to add to your collection.
Yeah. Exactly. I think it's great to talk about all the things you love about the card when you really believe that. But when you're moving on from the card, it's tough to believe that you still really believe in the card if you're also moving on from it.
I will give credit to the hobby. You've said this before. We are very good at sniffing this out. Like, this is our best skill. It's just like, the BS meter of hobbyists is on point. They should put us on juries. You know, we would just be, no, I don't know, man. That's this guy here. Is this guy's full of it?
Yeah. I think that probably the smoothest way to go about it, and like this is going to be a little counterintuitive, smoothest way to go about it is just send that thing to auction, or you know, if you're doing a story sale, just post the card. Yeah, and just that's it.
My favorite one. This is one of my favorite lines. Go and get your bids in. Like, you want me to just go bid on it just for the sake of it, or are you saying like I want the card? I don't understand that.
Available until kickoff.
And then if I message him as Butker's kicking it off, nope. If I offered him $1 billion after kickoff, he's like, nope, missed it.
Get your offers in now, because otherwise this is going to golden, boys.
If you don't offer me this right now, I'm going to send this to grading. I'm going to send it to grading, and then it's going to go to golden, and you're never going to have a chance. It's going to get a 10, and then it's going to sell for $1 million.
Awesome. All right. Next up, from PC with DPZ. I sometimes enjoy the show. If I were to buy a card private, I don't doubt that either. If I were to buy a card privately at a significant discount, am I morally responsible to report it? It's like to report the private sale so that other people do not pay based off of an old comp.
Mm. Well, I know Chris loves spending his entire day reviewing sales, so yes.
Yeah. The thing about this that's like, can like, we need more facts a little bit here, because if you got the card at a deal, you know, it kind of comes to a question of like, what is market value, you know, and it intersects with what's a person's right to privacy, you know, does a person have a right to keep their dealings private in the circumstance where they underpay for something.
Yeah.
The thing about morality in this question is that, there's an objective morality that we could probably talk about for a long time and try and figure out the right answer. And there'd be a lot of different ways to approach this. But then there's also the subjective morality, which is, if you do feel a sense of duty to make sure that people know that, hey, this card transacted at a low price, then why not? You know?
Yeah.
Why? How much money are you saving potentially if you might hypothetically sell this down the line or whatever? You know, if you feel a sense of duty to do it, I'm not going to talk you out of it. If you feel it's the right thing to do.
Yeah. I also like, though, that the hobby does have this bit of mystery and unknown on like what something is worth at any given time. You know, this isn't a grocery store or a stock market. We don't have like exact specific liquid values at every second. So if we miss one private sale, you know, the hobby sort of, it keeps the mystery alive, and we move on and we'll wait for the next public auction, you know?
Exactly. I do think along those lines, people have a right to keep their private dealings private, and that the public doesn't have a right to know what they are. But it starts to get a little bit gray if somebody that you're possibly negotiating with asks you, what did you pay for this?
Mm.
You can say, I prefer not to say, but don't, it would be morally impermissible to tell a lie, to lie about what you paid. But I think it's totally fine to say, I'd rather not say, or to tell the truth, but to tell a lie, that's where I think we're pretty clearly in.
Yeah. Just tell them it's,
all right, good.
Just tell them it's less than you're about to pay, bud.
Don't worry, I'm making a big profit, buddy.
Potentially available, aka if you offer me more than I just paid.
All right, I'm sure that that'll be a topic on their show. All right. Jeffro's Jordans and More says, should your favorite card in your collection be the one that you've spent the most money on? And while we're at it, what is your favorite card in your collection?
Hmm. Should it be? I don't know. No.
Hmm.
Especially given like the fluctuation in values, you could have bought something 2 years ago for more than you bought today. But if you would have bought, you know, if you would have reversed them, it would have been the other way around, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, this is like, I'm not sure if we're overthinking this, but in no way, shape, or form does, whether it's the most you paid or it's the most valuable, in no way, shape, or form does that need to be your favorite card.
Yeah.
not at all. So, but in terms of like, if I were to say what my favorite card is, I don't have one. I really, really don't have one.
Yeah.
I'm more worried about getting out of my collection any card that doesn't have the potential to like be like a favorite card.
That's hilarious. You're not focused on your top players on your team. You're focused on who's fucking things up at the bottom.
Yeah. I'm the guy who's like signing guys to two-way deals and cutting guys.
Yeah.
15-10.
I mean, that's pretty much what a GM is doing. Like, you know, the GM's not really worried about Luka. He already knows what he's going to get. He's trying to figure out what to do with the around the edges.
Exactly. All right. Interesting question. From In Cardboard Veritas, will hobby platform selling fees, also known as the hobby tax, ever broadly approach a less punitive 5 to 7%?
Seems like it's going the other way, dude.
My slabs has stayed constant.
Yeah. I think there are a few places, depending upon the value of your item, where you can get into that 5% range. But this question, he used the word broadly. Will it ever, in other words, like, will everybody converge upon?
No.
Yeah.
No. I don't know when everyone converged on 20%, but I wish we would converge downward.
Drake's PC with another question. Every card I've bought for the last 3 years has been for my collection. And on rare and scarce cards, the slab that it's in, whether BGS or PSA, is really irrelevant to me. While I only grade with PSA myself, I have no issue getting cards in BGS slabs. However, recently, when looking to upgrade a card from a BGS 8.5 to a 9 on a rare 90s card, I was told by a dealer that he was not interested in the card in a BGS slab because it's harder for him to move it. We all know that PSA is king, and this is a small sample, but do you think a decrease in demand for rare and scarce cards in BGS slabs is a bit much?
A bit much. I mean, it's definitely happening, right? We're acknowledging that it's happening, and we're giving the opinion, do we think it's too far?
Yeah, I mean, I don't... This is... Drake is giving one anecdotal issue, or instance, one anecdotal instance. So I don't know if this is a trend or not. I've never encountered this myself personally, but maybe we can treat his specific example on its own. Is it wrong, or is it annoying or frustrating or something if this dealer in this situation is not willing to take the card in a BGS slab?
Well, this is the part where we tell everybody we are owned by Collectors, which is, we're a sister company with PSA. So we have an affiliation with PSA, and we talk about PSA a lot. BGS is obviously a competitor of PSA, so, you know, it's hard for us to, like, give an unbiased answer on this one, especially me. I personally collect PSA cards exclusively, so it's even harder for me. But, you know, I guess my response is, like, if the dealer is saying that from his customers and he's interacting with a lot of people and that's just what he's hearing, he's just kind of going off of, like, what the demand is, and that he just wants to make it easier on himself, so that's just what he's doing.
100%. Yeah, like, so I'll take it in a different direction, because I think that's obviously the first observation to make is what you just said. I'll take it to a different place, which is, if the card that I'm collecting loses all desirability because of the slab that it's in, I shouldn't be collecting that card. And it's not that hard for a card to get crossed over from one grading company to another.
Yep.
So I just have a hard time thinking that it's, you know, that this is ever going to become a widespread problem, not just for BGS, but for any alternative slab. But I would say that, if the dealer is saying, I'm going to give you less for a BGS grade than I would if you had the exact same numerical grade in PSA. That hard to argue against that.
Yeah.
You know? So, all right. Interesting question.
Depends
all right.
On the card, right? If it's like a super rare card that we're trying to collect, you know, I don't even care what slab or anything it's in. I'll deal with that myself after I buy it. But if it's something semi-common, and it's like, I'll just wait. You know, I don't want to buy that one. I'd rather just wait for a different grading company later.
Yep. All right. From Enjoy Cards IG. Okay, this was really interesting. I recently bought a low-grade Kareem, parentheses, Luel Cinder rookie card for around $500. I can see on Card Ladder that the total pop on this card for all grades in major grading companies is just over 8,000, thanks to Gemrate. Ever since, my brain has been in a bit of a swirl trying to put that into context. This was pretty much Kareem's only rookie card of significance. Bill Simmons has a number 3 all time on his hallowed basketball pyramid. He also once had Robert Horry on that pyramid too. Then I think of the almost incalculable population of a modern NBA player's rookie cards. Breakers just speeding through the base cards looking for the hits. Products with over 30 one of ones. All the players of past promise who have very little hobby love now. What do you do to help keep it all in perspective?
This is like the tall boy Kareem, the rookie. I'm trying to picture it.
That's great. Let me, I should have this pulled up and show it. Hang on. This is the 1969 Topps Kareem. It is a tall boy. And what grade did he say? Let me show the 10 just because the 10 is such a cool card.
Yeah, that was like a pop 4 or something.
It's a pop 2, and it was a pop 1 less than 10 years ago.
Dang.
Now it's a pop 2.
This has always been kind of an interesting part of vintage for me is that, yeah, you're talking about one card for some of these guys. Remember we were talking about this with Julius Erving because his rookie's a pop 1. Yep. And Kareem's is a pop 2. It's like, you know, this is basically the equivalent. This is like their Black Prism, right? This is their one-of-one, kind of their best card because there is no other variations. It's just the grade. And hearing the 8,000 does seem pretty low. You know, that's a pretty low number. I would imagine that Jordan's clear total population grade is much, much higher than 8,000.
Yeah, it's way high.
Yeah, so, I mean, if that's something that gets you more excited about what you've purchased, I think that's a really cool stat to look at and compare across other vintage cards. It's hard to compare it to modern because there's different variations, but if you can compare it to other years of vintage and other like comparable players like the MJ rookie or the Julius Erving, it's like, man, the Kareem is a lot more rare.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a great case for the card. There used to be more talk about the sort of the cool factor of how the millionaire who owns the 69 Topps PSA 10 still owns the same card that the blue collar guy has in a PSA 2. It's the same card, literally the exact same card, came out the same printing press, came out of the same pack, just a different grade. But if the question asker wants, you know, some balance to this point of view, the balance would be this. One of the issues with vintage of this variety is that sometimes you have PSA 4s that look worse than PSA 7s, and you get a lot of variation eye appeal that sort of makes it hard to figure out which cut.
The other way.
What do you mean?
You said PSA 4s that look worse than 7s.
That look better than 7s, is what I meant to say. So thank you. And so, like, it gets weird sometimes, like, trying to figure out which one is actually better than the other and get a little complicated. Some people like that, though. Nothing wrong with that. And the flip side of that is that with the ultra-modern stuff, you don't really have to bother with that if you don't want to, because it's not condition, first and foremost, that's setting apart one card from another. It's rarity, and it's brand, and it's design. So, you know, whereas Kareem has 8,000 copies of this card, and all 8,000 are desirable, if you wanted to get to 8,000 copies, like if you like said, what are the 8,000 best copies of an ultra modern player's cards? Those are all going to be really good cards. Those are all going to be desirable cards. The junk factor comes later on down the line when you just have just pallets full of, you know, I don't want to name a brand and offend anybody, but you just have pallets full of copies of a card that was not ever made to be a long-term store of value, let's say. So there's kind of the other side of it from my point of view. All right. Iowa Dave Sports Cards says, when Fanatics signed Wembanyama, CJ Stroud, and others over the last year, I assume that meant the collectors would have to choose between licensed cards of those athletes without autographs or unlicensed cards with autographs. Okay. Instead, except for a few exceptions, Fanatics has taken those athletes and basically just stashed them away so that nobody can collect their autographs. Like when that billionaire bought the one copy of the Wu-Tang album that no one else can listen to and stuck it in a safe. That was Martin Shkreli who did that, if I'm not mistaken.
I remember that guy.
Yeah.
He the guy who like bought the insulin
yes.
medication and then raised the price. Yeah, he's a yeah. winner.
He went to prison for a while, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, oh. he's a great person.
Darn. I bet he had a lot of fun there.
I think he's really into crypto and NFTs hopefully, now.
Oh. Hopefully his roommate in prison like had like a grandma who had diabetes or something. He got real nice treatment every night after the lights went off.
Did you ever
Do you remember?
See the... Yeah. Go ahead.
No, finish. Go ahead. Go. No. Go. I was changing a little bit. Go.
The Fire Festival documentaries or any of that stuff? Do you remember that?
I have not seen it. I do know the gist of it, though.
That guy. He's in this. He's lumped into this as well.
Yeah. So the way that Wu-Tang thing worked was Wu-Tang, rather than selling a bunch of copies of their album, they said, we're just going to make available one copy of our album and just see who bids the highest. And then, like, the person who wins the album can, you know, distribute it how they see fit. I think, I don't remember exactly what the terms and conditions of the purchase were, but Shkreli won it, and then apparently, I remember him winning it, but apparently he wouldn't let anybody else listen to it.
So, why aren't we mad at the Wu-Tang Clan for this one? Like, what do they think was going to happen?
It's a good question.
I also would like to apologize. That was like really mean of me and not very Christian of me to say that about him.
Yeah, would you like to try again?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
I hope that...
Well, why don't you start by apologizing?
I just did.
Okay.
I hope that he had a very safe and pleasant time in prison.
But you hope that he got... You hope that he got like a cavity or something.
Yeah, there you go.
No, even that. I'm trying to be better.
I know when Lent is going to end because you'll start swearing again. I don't even look it up. I'll just know.
It's Easter, bud. That's literally the end of Lent.
Well,
that's what he said.
It's a funny joke.
That was one. All right.
Easter is not on the same day every year. It's moved.
Okay, so Iowa Dave's question.
Yeah, your kids are still going to celebrate it.
Well,
Iowa Dave's. Well,
maybe I'll be sleeping that day.
His question is, why is Fanatics doing this? Why have they acquired all these prominent, high-projecting young players but not really put out many products with them? And this is funny because this is one of the situations where, like, the manufacturer can't win. Either they're not putting out enough or they're putting out too much. But there's a valid complaint here
yeah.
for sure, which is, where are the products with my damn Wemby autos?
Probably something to do with like an IPO or something. some revenue reason. It always is.
Yeah, probably. Somebody remarked, a friend remarked the other day that it's going to be funny when the shoes change feet in 2 years,
mm-hmm.
and Panini becomes the company making unlicensed products of the young prospects that they're signing for a bunch of money up front, and Fanatics will be making the fully licensed products, but they're going to get snubbed every year for a few big prospects that Panini will have purchased the rights to.
And Panini will purchase the rights to specific ones just to spite them back.
Totally. Yeah. So, like, this comes back to the Caitlin Clark thing, which Jose sent a question in about that. He's in the chat.
She was in, like, Topps products with Collegiate, and now she's going to switch to Panini, and then the license is going to switch, so she'll be very complicated.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So, shout out to Jose. Don't worry, be happy. And his question was this. Let's discuss Caitlin Clark signing with Panini. All right.
Are you thinking that, do they have the WNBA license too? Or is he thinking that the Detroit Pistons will actually draft her?
The Wizards are worse, people. The Wizards are worse.
Okay, well, the Wizards then will draft her.
Yeah, so...
I think that if your team is really that bad and no one wants to come to Washington, because no one ever does want to come to Washington, it would be a great gimmick to draft Caitlin Clark and have, like, all of the female population of the U.S. support your team now.
Okay.
Just saying.
Christina's got her GM thinking cap on today. Yeah, so... WNBA, yeah, I guess I don't really know who controls that license or even when it changes. Hauser 1921 says Panini will control WNBA and soccer stickers.
Doesn't the NBA own the WNBA?
They're separate entities, though. They're not owned.
They have separate,
I don't know.
Separate licenses.
Don't know how that works.
They were previously.
Do you know how that works? No, probably not.
I know that the NBA subsidizes the WNBA because the WNBA loses money.
But we don't know how those licenses work. So let's just
what I asked originally. Just leave it at that. I was the one who asked that originally.
Hey, it's Lent.
It's also today's Women's International Day, so we have to be nice to women.
Oh, we have a question.
Just for today, though.
Yep.
Just not Christina.
We do have a question.
Tomorrow we can go back to...
For sure. All right.
Go ahead. Finish that sentence, Josh.
I'm good.
Anything else to say here about Fanatics? Sort of. Maybe. I don't know. Because, like, Wemby is almost through with his rookie season. There's about a month left. Stroud's rookie season is over. I don't know. All right. Pac Nicholson asks, if you suddenly went blind, would you still collect?
No.
What do you think the point of this question is?
Well, if you just really care about, like, the status and the, you know, like, the ranking and statistics of the card, I guess, you know, what product it comes from, the fact that it's the, like, if you knew it was the black Wemby 101 but you had no idea what it looked like, would you still want it?
I can think of a few people who would.
Yeah, I definitely would not. It's like, I don't see the point anymore.
It's, yeah, to me, all right, and, like, this isn't going to be a perfect analogy, but to me, it would be tantamount to losing my sense of taste and smell, but then asking me if I still would like to pay extra money to get gourmet meals at a nice restaurant.
Right. Well, at that point, you would just, like, completely optimize for, like,
for health.
Health or something. Yeah, you just, like, focus on which is the best for me that's going to keep me alive the longest, because I no longer care about taste.
Exactly. I just go straight to those processed foods.
I might have to undo that one somehow.
No, I love that one.
I think that I would want to do something. Like, I think I would want to switch into a hobby that would bring me the same amount of joy. Like so maybe that's,
well, you know,
music when, or...
Music, that when, yeah. One, when one sense goes down, the other supposedly heightened.
Yes. Or, like, maybe I'll collect, like, Braille books. And there we go. A lot more.
Dude, the hilarious irony, Chris, is that you'd have to start doing more voice messages.
Nope, I still wouldn't. That'd be my sticking point. I'd hold out on that.
You'd just not communicate anymore.
It's just not happening. All right. In all seriousness, though, there still is significance to cards, whether or not you like what they look like.
Yeah.
That something about that is related to this, but I don't know how. All right. True Card Adventures would like to know, is set collecting dead in the modern era? And if not, which set would you consider collecting?
It's not dead, but it's definitely reduced because there's more like player collecting and, you know, people collecting. Like, would you consider collecting like a gold Prism run? That's like a set, right?
Sure.
I think there's still some of that going on. I feel like there's still people that collect gold Prism sets of every player.
There's definitely a lot of that going on, I think. Wasn't that long ago that Carlson Cards was collecting or working on collecting a select gold set?
Yeah, like 2014, I believe, or 2013?
Yeah, 2013, yeah. I think. So, also, like, it might not be prominent or headline-grabbing, but I had occasion to be looking at sales today of the Bedard Young Guns rookie, and I saw somebody sold a complete set of Upper Deck Hockey Series 2, and that card was included in it. So, like, somebody out there built that set.
And someone else bought it.
And, like, building sets is, like, a fun way to make the agony of opening boxes and losing money a little less painful.
Right. You're like, look, I've already got a decent chunk of this done. Might as well just finish it up.
Right. Exactly. And collecting sets is definitely a way to engage with the hobby on a light budget.
Yeah.
You know, it's like go through the hoops of acquiring all those base cards.
I feel like we're just, our brains have been warped by what we see on Instagram, and we've kind of just, we're not seeing as much of some of these other things that people are doing. We're just kind of seeing like the big sales and the big breaks and flips, and we just kind of keep seeing that same stuff over and over, and we forget that there's still people who collect in, you know, ways that we haven't talked about, but they still exist. And it's like when we talk about how we keep seeing the same cards hit auction over and over, and then when we actually dig in, it's like only 10% of the population. Therefore, like 90% is actually just remaining in collections that are quietly going about their business. We just don't know about it.
Agreed. From Timmy D21PC, how do you decide when to go all out for a card? What meaning? How do you decide when to pay way above comps?
Mega bid.
Is it safe to say that word again?
Yeah. What didn't we ruin? Didn't someone ruin it or something? Like, we got.
I don't know. I feel like
no one can ruin that word. All right. The word stands apart. The word is true, no matter who utters it or when. Yes.
I think that the card has to speak to you and your collection beyond like a normal card. Like, okay. You can't just be like, this will be cool to have to my collection. It has to be like, I will be devastated if I don't add this to my collection.
Yeah.
That's usually something I've been waiting for, you know, a long, like over a year, where I've been wanting it, looking for it, And all of a sudden it comes up to auction. It's like, oh my gosh, I have to win this thing. You know, I've been waiting.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say pretty much the same thing is what you guys are saying, but I would say it like the opposite of how you say it. Where like yours is like, I'd be devastated.
Of course you would.
Yours is like, I'd be devastated if I don't get it. And mine is like, I'm so excited at the possibility of getting it that it just lights this fire where I just hope that the person I'm negotiating with doesn't really know that, that like they could really put me over a barrel if they wanted to.
You have one of those auctions, you like check it every morning and you're like, oh my God, who else is bidding on this? I thought it was just me. Like, what's going on? Someone, it's up 500 from yesterday on Screwed. Like, I'm never going to, you like start way over analyzing the prices.
Yeah. Yep.
Then you Both start putting on Crossover and boosting the value more.
Jose says your heart starts palpitating when you see the card listing, which is, yeah. That's yep. All right. Stacking slabs. Hannah, what are the defining... What's that?
I know that guy.
What are the defining traits of a card radical? Discuss the lifestyle choices that one makes. I don't know if there's any... Are there any card radical... I mean...
This is all you. You came up with this, not me.
I think there's just one card radical out there and it's myself.
Really?
I knew she was going to do that.
All right. What's your answer to the question?
You're the only card radical, not the radical who goes like...
Well, if you're the expert on card radicals, you answer the question. Oh, she's got to make a mark. Let's see. How many curses is that? Look, I don't want to put anybody in the card radical box that doesn't want to be there. If anybody wants to be there, come on in. The bucket is wide open. But I don't want to put anybody in there who isn't in there. Because being a card radical means, like, it's unhealthy.
Why don't you give us a brief synopsis?
It's when... A starting point is like every single decision that involves spending a dollar is measured in terms of the cards that you can't get as a result of spending that dollar.
Like you orient your entire budget around cards.
Yeah. Yep. That's like an entry point into this discussion.
Like
another, you're like you're in school and you have a very like limited budget and you take money out of the grocery budget one month so that you could buy a card. And then you have to figure out how many peanut butter sandwiches you have to eat for the rest of the month before you can buy groceries again.
Okay.
Mm.
Yep. I think card radicalism means more than that though. Like, and this is why I don't really want to talk about this or like put it out there, because like it really means making imprudent choices sometimes to truly be the card radical, you know. It's like it's like spending your last dollar on a card basically, because like it's, yeah, that's why like it's just like, look, like card radicalism, you know, it's not for everybody.
You won't be recruiting people into this cult.
I'm telling people not to do this.
Meanwhile, I'm telling people to buy their Nikes and drink that Kool-Aid.
I wouldn't do it. It's but if you are one of these people, like, you know, you're just obsessed with cards, I guess. I don't know, man. That's not a question for the public consumption, I guess. I don't know.
Hi, my name is Chris, and I have a problem.
Yeah, exactly. If you're a card radical, maybe Card Radicals Anonymous will start having meetings.
You need HA, Hobbyist Anonymous.
Exactly. All right.
Pretty sure HA means something else.
Ha.
Mike Pinkerton 50. says, what do you think is the next big hobby company that will be purchased and by who?
Oh, man. I don't want to speculate on this, dude. We'll get in trouble.
Yeah. What benefit is there, Mike, to us speculating on this? None.
Doesn't everyone want Beckett to be bought by Fanatics? Isn't that the favorite one? And we basically talked last week how it's not even possible.
Yep. Been down that road. Here's a slightly different question. Do we want everything to be bought by something bigger over and over again? No.
I was hoping we can undo some of them.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. So what can I'm obviously being facetious with Mike. Appreciate the questions that Mike sends in. But what is with the fascination about pretty dry mergers and acquisitions? You know? Why is this such big hobby news when it happens?
Yeah, what else are we supposed to get excited about? No, I mean, the Wemby comes out and we start shitting all over it, so...
Yeah. I guess because, like, companies buy other companies and stuff, it somehow means that, like, the cards we already own are somehow going to get more valuable, right? That's where it ultimately leads.
That's where everything leads.
Okay.
That's why people make those comments on the Wemby, because they're somehow trying to divert the attention towards, like, some category they would rather spend their money on, because that's what they have.
If SGC is worth X, then my card is worth X divided by 2, okay?
All roads lead to my collection being worth double what it was yesterday.
Exactly.
Beavis Card says, if Elon Musk buys Beckett, what does that make my BGS 9.5 mobile?
Yeah, exactly. That sums it up nicely. And then he tweets about it. Isn't that the thing? Like, once Musk tweets something, then all of a sudden it skyrockets.
Shouldn't you want Ryan Reynolds to buy it then? Because doesn't he do that as well?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, he bought some F1 team. I was watching the F1 season. He bought one of the teams.
He did. Impressive.
Yeah. And then they tanked and got last place.
Yeah, I saw the F1 results last weekend, and you wouldn't believe how shocked I was that Verstappen won.
Yeah, it's like, it's bad. It's just like, his car is so much better that it's not even really entertaining anymore.
Normally don't take questions from the chat, but we have a special one here from Runs with Bowls 23, who has announced himself as the winner of the most recent Mahomes Prism Gold rookie.
Congrats, Amit.
Congrats, Amit. And he wants us to discuss the recent Luka Gold versus Mahomes Gold Prism sales. Did you know that Gronkowski called him Patrick McHomes on one of those shows? I enjoyed it. Okay, so Amit, the thing to think about here, because I think like the underlying tension is that Mahomes is already one of the best quarterbacks of all time. And the thing to think about is that football does not have nearly the Asian demand. In particular, I mean the Asian markets and Asian collectors, literally from Asia, when I say Asian. There is not nearly the same amount of demand for football from those collectors that there is for basketball.
Yeah.
And those collectors make markets.
Just look at the, Brett Favre and John Elway, Green PNG versus Dennis Rodman. There's another answer.
Awesome. That's great. All right. Yeah, if you ever get tired of that card, Amit, I'll take it.
Yeah. All that said, pretty good value on the three-time Super Bowl champ.
Yeah. yeah, like if you find yourself getting frustrated with the market for that, just you can let that thing go, buddy. All right.
Yeah, jealousy overcame.
Okay, got another title there. All right. From Tasty Cart Sandwich, we have another Elon Musk reference here.
Great.
If Elon Musk approached you with the Michael Jordan Gem Masters and said you can have it free of monetary cost if you complete the drug decathlon, which is doing Molly, Special K, black tar heroin, crack, cocaine, meth, fentanyl, Tucci, mushrooms, LSD, opium, and marijuana. That's 12, by the way.
I can't believe you are reading this question.
All over the course of 24 hours, would you do it?
Would you die?
Are you card radical enough? Okay, he's throwing the gauntlet down.
But he doesn't specify the amount. So if I just take like one tiny fraction of an amount of each of these, then I'll be fine.
If you just microdose?
Yeah, and I'll mix them in an Oreo or something. You know, like put it in the Oreo and smash it up and just eat it.
Yeah, I would probably want to do something like that, where it's like just take it like what, like at the, all at the same time, just lay there and be like, I'm gonna just exist here until I ride this thing out.
I'm just picturing this, and you're just like, hey, you know the emoji where like the girl is like holding her knees and like rocking back and forth. That's Christina like in the middle of her room for like 24 hours.
Yeah, I would just be like, let's just get it all down.
I agree.
Like from uppers and downers, like how would you even do that in 24 hours?
I'm with Christina.
What are you guys are doing it?
I don't do drugs. Like I don't drink. So like I.
She doesn't even swear. Like
I mean, no, I have 36 swears since Ash Wednesday. But
she doesn't even think a negative thought.
I do, and then I say it, and then I repent because I am flawed. But I know this. And I ask for forgiveness. But I don't think I would have a problem. Like, famous last words, right? Like, I don't think I'd have a problem doing it once and then being like, okay, I'm never doing that again.
Okay.
It would be a really bad day, but you'd have the card.
Yeah. I would do that for you, is what I'm saying.
Well, Beavis Card says, "What if I've already done that?" And you didn't get a Gem Master's.
So
you can contact Beavis and ask him for the Gem Master.
Beavis is like, some of us do that for pleasure by itself, guys.
Elon Musk needs to get a life. He's like walking up to random people and being like, "Here, take these 12 drugs, and I'll give you all this money." It doesn't make any sense.
He's way out of control.
What if I steal the card from him and
okay,
then call
no,
the cops
just, no, no.
Because he has all these drugs on him.
There's always a temptation to like rewrite the question or fight the question.
Just, I already told you how to do it.
You didn't answer.
All right.
So, Mr. Yeah,
you didn't
criticizing us,
you're just trying to deflect from answering. That's what
well, I like what Jose says, card radical. That's a card crackhead.
No, you're still not answering the question.
Okay, I just wanted those comments to get a little shine. Okay, my answer is no.
Oh, you square.
Yeah, I think that would kill you if you did all that.
No, yeah, again, it didn't specify how much.
Well,
I mean, is it fentanyl? Like,
and then don't you risk being pills? Like addicted?
Well, that's why I said, like, yeah. I don't think I would have a problem being like. And that's what I said, famous last words, like, one and done, I'm good now.
I don't think you'd get addicted because it would be such a horrible experience that day that you would hate all of those drugs.
I mean, I'm going to have to do some research and talk to some people who've done these things because I don't know.
Yeah, what if there's, like, issues with mixing some of them and you just die?
I would imagine, like I said, some of these are uppers and others are downers, so that's going to be an issue.
I'd go up to Elon Musk and I'd be like, You know, sometimes I send you those tweets from that guy who's like, my landlord raised my rent $500 and I told him raise it $1,000 because it'll make me grind harder.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to Elon Musk and be like, you need to add twice as many drugs to this so that I grind harder to get this card.
Well, I know there's a real I know there's a real temptation to change the questions, Chris, but you shouldn't do that.
Oh!
I'm making it more. I'm taking it further.
So you can grind harder and die faster.
Yes. Like, come on, bro. All right.
That's a very interesting question.
Yeah.
Okay. Guys, I would just like to preface this. If there's anyone who's watching who needs to be told, no, we are not saying you should do drugs. And like Nancy Reagan, the ex-first lady, once said, just say no.
Yes.
This is all satire.
All right. You know, the backfiring of something like that is there's some people, if you tell them what not to do, they want to do it that much more. So you might have actually just created an addict. Thank you. Thank you for that. All right. All right, what do we have?
If you could be influenced by a voice, not even on camera, during this show. Don't one up this.
Yes.
The society doesn't need you.
Just imagine.
now she throws down the phone.
Imagine someone telling their therapist or their doctor, I'm now addicted to black tar heroin. Is that what it's called? Black tar? Mm-hmm. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Because I listened to a sports card podcast late at night.
Let's not have that. All right.
Yeah.
Cardboard insights with a question on the longer side. But and you know what? I want to reward the questions with creativity. So but don't get too creative. That question may have been written while on drugs. Cardboard Insights has this to say. There is an office episode where Michael needs to complete and sign routine paperwork, but sometimes there is a day when the weekly, the monthly, and the quarterly paperwork all falls on the same day and all three separate sets of paperwork are due at the same time. In the episode, yeah, you remember this?
Oh yeah, I remember all the episodes, dude.
Okay, in this episode, Pam refers to it as the perfect storm. Sometimes in the hobby, a series of events can lead to a personal collection perfect storm. When several key cards for a player come to market at the same time, this makes us go through the effort of trying, sometimes to no avail, to prioritize. I thought this was an interesting phenomenon, as it is this double-edged sword. The excitement we all yearn for is finally here as rare and scarce items come to market, but with it comes the dark clouds of realization of needing to find funds and perhaps give up cherished pieces. Why do grails come in bunches, and is the yin and yang of getting something only by giving up something inevitable?
Well, this is why God created credit cards, and the magic of the credit card is that you can put all those purchases on the credit card and then figure out how to pay for it for real later.
There you go.
Following up on our take drugs advice. Yeah.
Take drugs and go into
disclaimer. This is satire. We do not suggest that you mortgage your home or live life on credit card debt in order to collect cards. Please live within your means, and anything that we say should not be taken seriously. Thank you.
Okay. So I felt like this was more of a venting question, and you know, you have been heard, Cardboard Insights, about the frustration of prioritizing when a bunch of stuff comes out at once. And plus one for the office reference. And then he had a follow-up question that got a little more particular. A few months ago, an obscure 90s player had about 12 key cards come to auction at the same time, and this did several things for me. Number one, even though I had no connection to this player, I felt a strong urge to get all these items and bring them together. This is interesting because had they come up one at a time, I would have much less interest in doing that. And number two, it made me question some of the basic tenets of why I collected and the way I collect. Have you ever wanted to procure and assemble a few unique items just because they were available? Is this insane?
No,
this is kind of like, it's not the same thing, but it's kind of like you're on eBay and you like see the ultimate collection Logo Man 1 of 1. Of like a semi-decent player, and you're like, I'm not going out of my way. I would never go out of my way to get this card, but like, oh, here it is staring me in the face. I actually think a lot of people collect that way. Yeah. I think that's why auctions work. I think like people wait for the new Golden Elite, for example, and then they go through it, and then like cards stand out to them that they would never have had on a laundry list of cards that they want to go get, But they're like, oh, this is available? Like, yeah, I should get this. Like, if I can get this at a good value or whatever, I should get this. I think that happens a lot.
Yeah.
All right. And one more, final one from Cardboard Insights. For many collectors, rarity and scarcity are at the top of their value hierarchy. In an alternative universe where every card is a one of one, how do collectors demand value in card hierarchy? What does the collector landscape look like?
If every card is a one of one, then no card is a one of one.
Exactly. Exactly. That's why I would like to introduce the concept of the one of one of one. Did I talk about this last week?
No, you sent it to me, though. And I laughed.
All right, so this is from a guy named Steven Benzel on Twitter, at all the Cubs. He says this. Christopher Morel has over 1,000 different cards in 2023. There are 159 one-of-ones. Three of the 36 sets that Morel is featured in have only one one-of-one. These are the true one-of-ones, the one-of-one-of-ones.
With the /1/1.
With this.
Yeah.
Me and seven other people really enjoyed that tweet.
Yeah, I think you and six others.
Sorry, me and six
others. That is pretty tough, I'll be honest.
We'll count Steven too, and then I'm right.
Okay.
Unless Steven liked it as well.
Is that like when you post on Reddit, it automatically upvotes your own post?
Yeah, it's something like that, yeah. Why did I mention the one of one of one? Oh, yes, okay.
The question, if they're all one of ones.
Yeah, if they're all one of ones and nothing's a one of one, that would be a terrible outcome. But this question is one of the more creative ways, and we've had lots of people attempt this over the iterations of this show to get us to say something about how aesthetics matter.
Yeah. Well, we had a question today about what if you're blind and they don't need aesthetics matter to none.
Yeah. That we've had two polar opposite questions then, I guess.
Yeah.
Because the one is like, what if there's no way to differentiate these cards at all because they're all one of ones?
Yeah, then it's just aesthetics. Yeah, great. We like the way cards look.
Definitely. But yeah, I really hope that never becomes a thing.
Yeah, that, I would just leave the hobby. That sounds horrible. That's just like,
everyone has
like custom art printed pieces of paper. We all just have like IP autos now.
Yeah. I've become more intrigued by the one of one of one ever since this concept. Like, I've always found it to be a cool extra selling point for a card if there's only one of one. But now that he's crystallized it into this concept of the one of one, I'm like consciously thinking about it more now. Is this the only one of one?
Even though you're aware of the silliness on the surface.
Yes. You're like at a certain point in your collective philosophy, you become like an athlete who's trying to find that extra 1/10 of a second that they can add to their 100-meter dash time.
Via drugs.
Yeah. By doing a decathlon of drugs. Actually, it's 12 drugs.
Steroids.
All right. From Kevin M. Cormier. How long does it take to rehab a card from the Flipper's Vortex? The Flipper's Vortex really has resonated with people over
I'm not sure you can rehab it. I think it's like it's more of like a Scarlet Letter kind of thing.
Yeah, it kind of is. Well, he goes on to say, I recently bought a card that had sold 3 times in 8 months, including a sale with obvious shilling. <It's> not... But it's an important card of a player I collect and will stay with me for the long haul.
Yeah.
If it were to be the victim of the consolidation game, when is it an appealing card? 2 years, 3 years, or never?
Yeah, I was kind of joking. I think if you really like it, I wouldn't worry about it, you know?
Yeah.
I'd be more worried about who specifically owned it than if they were just like three auctions.
Exactly. That's a great point. That's exactly right. We've been connecting questions and answers all night to previous parts of the show. I'm going to do it again. There was a discussion earlier when Mad City chimed in and said the Flippers Vortex becomes a problem when Flippers like get involved and they make the card become worth too much and so on and so forth. And like for certain cards, entering into the Flippers Vortex is a badge of honor on some level. It means that there's enough perceived demand for the card. The card is perceived to be interesting enough that it's had Flippers set their sights on it. So, you know, there's just because the card's in the Flippers Vortex doesn't mean it's a bad card. It might actually mean the opposite.
Yeah.
It might actually mean that it's a really good card that just unfortunately is falling in the Flippers Vortex.
I like it. You're like playing up the vortex analogy by just like, oh, he's falling into the vortex. Like it's sort of like
yeah.
Tunnel
got sucked
inside
in.
Of a, yeah, it's like a tunnel where there's like a whirlwind thing going.
Exactly.
I feel like you used like a purple emoji of like a spinning thing.
Yeah. Oh. Right. Pax That Slap says, what are your thoughts on the risk of buying Panini Redemptions with the licenses expiring soon?
So this would be actually buying like the white stock card redemption, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And like the worry is like if I buy this redemption, like
yeah.
I know this because like a Steph Curry and a Luka dual autograph redemption just came out. And it's like, do I buy this redemption? The question asker is saying, do I buy this redemption? With the fear that like this might never get signed and then the licenses run out and then what happens?
I had that fear before any of this stuff happened. Just those cards and like buying a literal, you know, IOU is very risky on a even without all this stuff. Because you know, there's horror stories about them taking 2, 3, 4 years. By that time, you might not even want the card. Like there's so many risks.
Totally. This is like. This is well outside my ordinary collecting purview. I've never bought a redemption card. I have redeemed some redemptions.
I have one active right now.
And
Iverson Jaw.
Yeah. Duel. And what I would say is Panini gives cards a certain window of time, and then if the redemption isn't fulfilled, then they give you an alternative of like a silver pack thing or some other card as a replacement or
the boxes at National.
Yeah. Or they do the white and black boxes, which I hate as much as I hate the Honors product, but we don't need to get into that right now. But yeah, I think the risk is that you might not get the card that you bought, but on the flip side, hopefully the system in place will make sure that at least you get your value's worth if they give you something instead of that redemption.
Yeah.
All right. From JP Zidane, tell me your favorite pickup and the story around it. Any negotiations? Did you have to sell anything? Did it give you anxiety?
Yeah, I mean, I guess probably like the LeBron Gold Refractor flying to Texas and meeting the couple that pulled it, or not pulled it, but bought it, and then just hearing the whole story about that was fun.
Any I travel, saw somebody post about that the other day.
Yeah, without giving me credit, I saw.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I found this video. Yeah, it's literally my video.
One day, like, someone's going to send that to you and be like, dude, Josh, isn't this cool? Yeah.
Yeah, it looks just like you. In this video.
Look, it's Kristaps Porzingis.
I was going to say, is that Porzingis? Is that? He's not wearing a Celtics jersey.
Yeah, I'm gonna do something annoying here and, like, do a little low-end flex on this one to be a man of the people. My favorite pickup ever was winning the auction for the BGS 8.5 Jordan Scoring Kings.
I was going to say Scoring Kings for you.
Yeah, yes, this story.
Yeah.
It was almost 8 years ago now that this happened.
Nice.
And that still is the highest of all highs of auction wins, was winning that card for like $100.
You're like, what am I doing with my life now? This is it.
Yeah. $100 also was $100 meant something back in that day.
Have you seen the meme or the reel when I think the movie's called Interstellar, and it's Matthew McConaughey like yelling at his previous self inside of his room when he's a kid, and he's like in the space suit. Is that you now? Like, no, don't buy it, no.
Maybe. All right, from 240 cards, if a celebrity like John Voight owned a card, would that make it more valuable?
No, less.
Less. Yeah, this is a Seinfeld reference.
I don't understand.
But
I do not care.
We take this question seriously. A card is better if it's unmolested by the perception of celebrity vanity.
There you go. Well said. That's a good sentence that you just said. Say it again.
I don't know if I could say that again. It just kind of came to me and then it went.
That's like that collectors or what is that one stupid phrase?
Oh, yeah. We don't like sports cards because they're good investments. They're good investments because we like sports cards.
Yeah, we could never say it on demand. Like people would be like on podcast, say that thing, and we're both just like,
Well, you know, they're, yeah. Kind of went a little something like this. Should have just been written down.
About,
I think I did at one point have it written down somewhere.
Something about being unmolested.
Yeah, the word molest, like, you know, you have like Google, I think they're called engrams or something where it like tracks the usage of words over time.
Yeah.
Some form of the word molest has showed up a lot in the last few
episodes. We need that for the last 12 months of the show, and I would just, let's put some guesses. What would be the top?
The word that's, like, come into the use the most on our show.
Yeah, it'd be, like, card and grading, and it would be, like, all those. But then, like, what would be the first one that you'd be like, wow, I did not know that?
Oh, yeah, that's good.
Vortex.
Vortex, yeah. the megabid graph.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm probably thinking of the ones where it's like the bigger, the more you say it, the bigger the circle. Is that something different?
I don't know.
Like the more that the word shows up,
yeah,
it like takes up more space and it's like a bigger circle.
Yeah. So like, yeah, what's the word that we use the most of all words?
Yeah. Like heroin?
Slab. Or like slab or something.
Office. Pizza.
Word cloud. There you go. A word cloud.
Chipotle.
There was a period of time where the word pizza would have been a big bubble.
And card letter would be like this little tiny dot in the bottom right.
Yeah, the card letter dot shrinks over time to be almost nothing.
Yeah. At the beginning of the show, you're like, do we have any announcements related to our business?
What business? I had somebody lost it. All right. Next question is from Doc Collects Cards. What are your thoughts on the Kobe Super 1/1 selling on alt and then immediately being consigned to Golden?
That's like commonplace at this point.
Yeah. Let me pull up a picture of this card so people can know what card we're talking about.
Ever sell? What percentage of the time does it sell for more the second time?
Not zero, probably. Maybe not often. Here's the card.
It's a sweet card.
Yep. 2005 Finest Kobe Bryant Gold Superfractor 1/1 PSA 10.
And it's, is this where I say all the things I'd rather spend my money on?
Yeah. It sold in December of 2023, and it's back for sale in a forthcoming Golden auction, I guess.
Yeah. That's such a short time. Ugh. Basically got it for Christmas and you're selling it before we even get to spring.
Before Christina can start cursing again.
Yes, exactly. She hasn't even finished her start and finish her freaking Lent.
there could be a lot of reasons behind this. It could be somebody who thought it went low and they're going to flip it. It could be somebody bought it and then they don't like it, or they found out something about it that they didn't know.
That it's Kobe.
So, could be a lot of things involved there. Hard to know. But yeah, it's pretty weird.
Yeah, it is weird.
From PLB cards, why does QA check 2 take so long, and why does PSA employ somebody that they clearly don't trust to do QA check 1?
Isn't it the last step before like slabbing it?
It's definitely down the line on that Papa John's delivery bar. It's down the line.
I always feel like it got stuck at QA check 2 because it's like, well, it's almost done, but it's not done. So we're just going to leave it at this stage.
Yeah. Yep. That's just one of those questions where somebody wants to vent a little bit and we'll let them.
The Domino's pizza tracker?
Yeah, Domino's. That's what it is.
Would you be swayed to get pizza from Domino's if I called it Domino's instead?
Yes.
Sounds fancier, doesn't it?
Way fancier.
Is that how you actually pronounce it in Italian?
Domino's?
Domino's.
No, Domino's.
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 I told my son, I was like, he doesn't like Domino's. Like, he's, you know, I've warped his brain to think like Christina, where we just have to get specific pizza places. And I was like, let's get Domino's tonight. And he's like, oh yeah, is that like a new pizza spot? We gotta try it. Let's go.
Marketing still works. All right. one last thought here. Let's not too seriously complain about having two levels of quality assurance.
Let's not complain about that at all.
It's good that we have two.
I thought we were mad that too many cards got graded too easily and quickly with grades they don't deserve. Now we're saying it's too slow.
I mean, let's add in a Q3, okay?
Yeah.
Maybe even a Q4.
Yeah.
Oh, I hate Q4. That's when everybody really tries to get the
if you do a Q&A show for long enough, you'll come to realize that people have an issue with everything from every angle.
Yes, 100%. You're so right. We've gotten conflicting questions just in this one episode.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Yeah, let's do this. All right. I have an answer to this question. From Cage Lawyer. If they, whoever they is.
The royal they.
The royal they.
That's not a thing.
Yeah.
It's the king's they.
It's the queen's we.
And the king's they.
No, the royal they. It's just like a...
Yeah. If they put Card Ladder in a card set, what set would you want to be in? I have an answer to this.
Like the,
all right.
Like we're like influencer cards or something?
So that's part of this, all right? So let me just say.
Okay, go ahead.
And then you guys can have things to say too if you want.
No, I don't.
My thing to say is this, all right?
So, I'm in Lent right now, so it's best if I not speak.
Oh, no. We were really hoping.
Please speak.
You know what?
Please. Okay, let's go.
The day's not over, Christopher or Joshua, okay?
I can't recover from that.
15 minutes of kindness left.
All right. My answer to this is Cage didn't specify what set, but I only collect sports cards, so those are really the only sets that I care about. And there is absolutely no reason to put me in a sports card set. And if I want to be in a sports card set, I could do it. I just have to make a pro level roster for a major sports team. So it's really that easy. And if I'm not on a pro level roster on a sports team, then I do not merit being put on a sports card. That's it. Like, do you remember when we had, I think it was when he came on this show, Josh Luber was talking about he was going to make a set of the dentists from Phoenix or something. Yeah. And like, I get that people want to collect non-sport sets, and that's fine. Card Light attracts non-sport sets. They're a big part of the market. I have no issue with it or with people collecting it, but it's not for me. It's not for me. So, like, my answer to this question is I only care about sports cards, and there's no reason for a person like me to be on a sports card. So,
but most of the ones that people collect are, like, you know, Star Wars or things with, like, huge brands behind them. I don't think anyone gives a shit about a random breaker being on a card.
There's that, too. All right. From Bruin Killer, as we wind down, Bruin Killer says, with today being International Women's Day and March being women's...
Still?
13 more minutes on this time zone. And March being Women's History Month, can you and CCJ... By the way, what do you think about CCJ? Cardboard Chronicles Josh.
I like it.
Don't like it?
No. Nope.
Okay. Can you and CCJ give us your list of the top... Well, it's just what it says. It's just, I'm not... Can you give us your list of the top five women that have helped grow the hobby?
Ooh.
So, I have an answer, but if you have one, you can go too.
Five?
Here, what do you think?
Well, Christina talked to number one today.
Okay. Well, I premeditated an answer to this question because I saw it in advance. So, while you guys think about your answer for your top five, here's mine. I don't like ranking people or things. So I'm not going to make a list that values or devalues one person over another based on their contributions, with one exception. I will put Christina at number one on my list of...
Period. Christina's just on your list at number one, period. You don't have to continue.
But also of this list... that George asked us to make about women helping to grow the hobby. And then two through five, too many qualified candidates to name. Don't want to leave.
Yeah, this is like asking us to rank our favorite content creators. We get that question a lot. We don't want to do that either, yeah.
Exactly. So, nice try, George, as usual. Very clever question. But you've been greeted with an equally clever answer. Sir, try again next week. All right. Oh, we had two questions on this topic. I'll read one of them. From the Spirit of Cardboard, I believe Josh has a celebrity lookalike in Kristaps Porzingis. But I haven't.
I'll let George call me CCJ if I get to call him WAWDH.
WAWDH? I think he would permit that, actually.
Well, then, fair's fair.
But he hasn't come up with a celebrity lookalike for me or Christina. Any ideas? I think we had a lookalike for me a few years ago. It was some, like, obese rapper.
Obese what?
Rapper.
Rapper? Yeah. Like Paul Wong?
Yeah, it wasn't Jelly Bean, but it was some other guy. I have no idea. I can't remember what his name was. This was during the era when we would spend an entire third hour talking about The Office.
Yeah. R.I.P.
R.I.P. Still have a lot of questions we haven't gotten to yet here.
One more.
One more?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's do this one.
John Daly.
I think we've tried this one before, actually, but... Jason F. Young 77 says, Bitcoin is back to its all-time high. Will there be an impact on sports cards? Will the cards in the CL50 ever get back?
Mm. Man, I just wish we could be like crypto one day. That's my goal. We're trying.
I'm trying to find the CL50 here. There it is. Okay. So the CL50 is an interesting graph. The CL50 has this huge spike in 2021. And then, like, if you kind of zoom in a little bit, it's had this really interesting recovery. It bottomed out in 2023 in December. And then basically since that time, it's gone up pretty consistently. So the CL50, though, is still a little bit shy of its all-time high. I mean, it's a little bit shy of half of its all-time high. Its all-time high was 31,000, and it's 14,000 today.
So, do you think there's some kind of like lag between the liquid markets and the collectibles markets or something?
I just don't think the collectibles markets ever – I don't think they have the influx and the outflow back and forth. I'm in the casino. I'm out of the casino. I'm back in the casino again. That's – some other markets have. I think it's just like it had a really hot moment. It corrected, but it's still 10 plus times bigger than it was, you know, let's see. If it's at 14,000 today and it was at 4,000 in 2019, so it's, you know, it's up about 3.5x the CL50 is from that time. I just think like that's a lot of growth, and it never really like bottomed out and then shot back up and bottomed out. It's just not that dynamic. I don't really think it works though. I think like if in order for cards to have like the Bitcoin bull run of going from like 15,000 to 67,000, 68,000 that it's done in the last year and a half, cards have to get way lower still before they can tour 3x over a 1.5 year period. And cards are too popular. It's too pleasant. People stick around in it for more than just financial reasons. And that makes it really hard for me to see it like plummeting to the extent that crypto's plummeted so that they could climb back up again.
Yeah. It's just different.
Yeah. I want to say this too. I am a skeptic of crypto and especially of Bitcoin for a myriad reasons, but I am happy for people who have done well as a result of it doing well. And like, just because I am skeptical of it, you know, to say the least, who cares? That's just my opinion. And if it does well, you know, great. And if it does poorly and I derive some small perverted satisfaction out of it, there's that too. But That's my two halves of my two sides of the coin. Either everybody's happy and it's doing great, and then I'm happy for you guys, or, you know, my vision of it is right, and then I'm happy then too.
There we go. Is this what you said?
No, it couldn't be. It could not be.
I think it is.
All right. Let's pick a title. We sort of like fell off about halfway through with like generating titles, but we have a bunch from the beginning of the show. First one.
After the drugs, we stopped.
Yeah. That's when the viewership dropped to 3 people. No, all right. First up, we have I Like to Be Negative. Then we have Every Comment Is Wrong. Just going to put a star by that one. I like that one. We'll Be the Ones Wearing Earmuffs.
At the National?
Yeah. Enslaving Them in Plastic Enclosures, a.k.a. Grading. Everything is worse with a comment section.
I feel like we've had that title before.
Yeah, yeah. Poop box listed for $3 million.
That's how you know we're still in Lent.
A grandma with diabetes.
Followed by an apology.
Yeah. Why aren't we mad at the Wu-Tang?
With just no context, that's a good one.
That is a good one. It's a really good one. All right. Then we have a hey, it's Lent. The Asian demand. And the royal they.
I'm pretty sure that's not the right usage, which is why it's funny.
A lot of good choices this time.
The royal they. What's the one you started?
I like the one called Every Comment is Wrong. It's just like it's just one shot across the bow at every commenter to every league of comment.
There's going to be comments below that caption.
Right.
Yeah. That one's pretty good.
All right, let's go with that. Every comment is wrong. All right. See you guys next week. Maybe we got.
CY Card Ladder is the most respected sports card analytics app on the market. We have virtually every card in our system. If the card you are looking for ever sold on one of these platforms, you can find it using Card Ladder's sales history. Easily find recent comps and get a better estimate what your cards are worth. CY Card Ladder is the most trusted and the most reliable sports card analytics app on the market. We know what you want. Because Card Ladder was created by collectors for collectors. Join the innovators, not the imitators. Card Ladder, constantly innovating. Try it for free. See why Card Ladder is the industry leader in sports card data. We know what it takes to be reaching the top. Card Ladder, we're just getting started.